Well, Daniel, this is a very special, special morning because we have somebody with us. His name is Curtis Robinson, and he has done so much for so many people with his family, and it's just incredible. The Curtis and Sheila Robinson Foundation, and when he came to Hartford, 1958, and it was the same year, Dan, that I came to Channel 3, and that's when I met him.
And Curtis joins us in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair. Curtis, we're honored to have you in studio this morning.
Thank you very much, Dan and Brad. I'm glad to be here.
And, Brad, first of all, tell the story, and then, Curtis, you can talk about it and how you found Curtis.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. He came to Hartford. He was going to Boston. Okay, he was on a bus going to Boston and ended up in Hartford, slept overnight in the park. I mean, this was just incredible. And all of a sudden, over the years, Curtis did this, he did that, and before you knew it, he was helping so many people. And the hotel, the big building, was right across where he slept that night. He ended up running that.
Well, let's start there. Why were you going to Boston, and from where were you coming?
Well, I was coming from Alabama, Birmingham, Alabama. I was born in Birmingham, Alabama, when I was 16 years old. It was Dan and Brad, as you know, in 1958. It was pretty tough in Alabama. We couldn't vote. We had no equal rights. We had no public accommodation. And I had no future there. So my mother, she saw this. My mother was very intuitive. She saw that Boston was on the other side of New York. And she said, if I can get my son out to Boston, I know he'll be safe. And I guess my wife always tell me to go a little beyond that. I was working at a gas station in Alabama, and my job was to pump gas. That's the only thing I could do. I couldn't even go inside to use the bathroom. And it was a guy and his wife who was running the gas station for this gentleman. And he had some tubes missing. And he came over and said, boy, did you take my tools? And I said, sir, I don't have your tools. I wouldn't know a pair of pliers from a screwdriver. And when I told him that, he proceeded to hit me. He hit me pretty hard and knocked me almost out. And I jumped up and grabbed him so he could stop hitting me. And a guy next door had a bunting company, put a gun in the back of my head and told me to run. And I ran, and I got home, and I told my mom about it, and she said, Curtis, they probably remember the Ku Klux Klan. I got to get you out of here. So she called the ADL, and they came over and got me, and then my mother looked in her little jar. She had $57, and she put me on this bus going to Boston. A guy from ADL put me in the back seat of his car, went down to Greyhound bus station. I never told you this, Brad. And they got me a ticket going to Boston, and I sat in the back of the bus and until we got to New York, and I knew the next stop was Boston. So next stop, I got off the bus, and I walked around for about an hour and asked the guy what part of Boston I was in. He said, no, this is Hartford, Connecticut. You got to go another 100 miles. So I ran back to get on the bus, and the bus had left. So what happened, I slept in the Bushnell Park. With the bologna sandwiches and my mother had made me. And the next morning I got up and it was a Shoreham Hotel. They just finished building the Shoreham Hotel and they had dishwashers, looking for dishwashers. So I went over and applied for a job and I got a job washing dishes and I told a guy in there my story and he said, you know, I have an extra room. You can stay with me until you get your first paycheck, which I did. In fact, I took care of the guy. He died about 13 years ago. To make a long story short, I worked there for about 3 weeks, and then the guy called up my mom and said he found out the guy was working for him was taking his tools, not me, and wanted to know if I would come back to work. But it was too late. I was here at the time. Make a long story short, I washed dishes, worked two jobs, and saved about $7,500 when I was 18. I walked in his grocery store going to another job, and the guy said, you know anyone who want to buy a grocery store? And I said, no. He said, well, if you know anyone who got $7,500, we're going to sell the store. So I went home and thought about it. If I were bought the store, I wouldn't have to work two jobs. So
and how old were you at this
I was 18.
18.
Yeah, that's right. 18. Yeah.
And so four guys was working there, and they all said they would stay with me. They stayed with me for about 3 weeks, and they said, Mr. Robert, I can't work for you. You're a nice young man, but I'm 40 years old. I can't tell my wife I'm working for an 18-year-old kid. So they left me, which was fine.
Now, did you know anything about running a business?
Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. In fact, it was a stalking law. They would have put me in jail because I went over to University of Hartford, a business. department, and I bugged the professor over there. I said, you got to come over and show me what I'm doing wrong. And he came over, and he helped me out and showed me, you know, how to mark stuff up and do things. And, well, in the year after that, I bought the building. And then...
Where was this in Hartford?
That was in Cape and Vine Street.
Okay.
Cape and Vine Street.
Yeah,
and after that, I started buying little apartments, and when I was 15 years later, I went back and bought the hotel. You know, everybody used to ask me, Mr. Robbins, how do you know how to fix this dishwasher when it break? I didn't tell them I was there when they put it in.
So you just kept saving and buying property.
Yeah, I started saving. Actually, when it started, actually, when I was 8 years old, I used to go get up in the morning and walk like 2 miles to the farmer's market. And all the farmers used to bring in their products. And the people with the little bodegas used to come in and buy the stuff from the farmers. And my job was to take it to the car after they purchased it. So one day the guy I worked for, I got sick, and he said, you know, if anybody come over my truck and get me. So about 6 o'clock in the morning, I walked over his truck and knocked on the door. He said, someone wants something? I said, no. He said, what happened? I sold everything. And he said, how'd you do that? I said, well, I know the prices are. If some was $1.50, I would tell people it was $2. But if they paid $1.50 before you wake up, I said they could have it all. So they used to buy it all. So from then on, he would just come in and go to sleep and let me run. So that was my first entrepreneur's experience. And then, you know, my mother bought old Scrumburst and Carson, which is a TV. You guys weren't born then. It was about 8 feet tall, had a 6 foot, 6 inches screen. And we were the only one in the community with a TV, and people used to come over and they used to hang out in the windows everywhere just to watch the TV, the Long Rangers, and Douglas Elwood was in the news. You guys don't remember that, it's too early. But so we just started them a dime to watch the TV, and they thought that was a great deal, and we started selling hamburgers and hot dogs. My mother was only making $30 a week, so that was my first thing entrepreneur. And I said, you know, I always thought that if someone give me $100 a week, I'm not their partner. They're not making $200 giving me half. So I just wanted to be on the other side. That's how I started.
Wow.
This is how it started.
This is tremendous.
And then, of course, Bradley International Airport.
Yes.
Tell them how you started.
Oh, my God. We went up and bidded on these gift shops back in, oh, my God, almost 30 years ago. And
these gift shops.
Yeah, right. We built on one, actually. We went in to Sandy Cloud, my partner, and I. We went in and we gave this really nice presentation. You know, Sandy had nothing in his briefcase, neither did I, but we gave his presentation. And the commissioner said, you know, I'm going to give you guys a shot. And he gave us a shot for one gift shop. And now we own all the shops there. We own the Brooks Brothers, the C&B shop.
All of them.
Oh, yeah, except the food, you know. So it's been great.
We're going to get back to this. This is a story I want to tell you, and it's just incredible, and that's an inspiration for people, Dan.
You bet.
Curtis Robinson, our very, very special guest, a dear friend. He's been of mine ever since I've been in Hartford, and what he has developed, what he has done, and just the other day, Dan.
Right.
Just the other day.
So we're going to get into that about what happened in the North End, what's going to take place in Southington. But, Curtis, let's rewind the clock a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you come to Hartford, Connecticut. The next thing you know, you're washing dishes, your first job. Were you able to, right at that point, determine the contrast between living in the South versus living in the North?
Absolutely. In fact, I've never seen integration before. When I got up to Baltimore, first time I ever saw, you know, blacks and whites together, and I had never seen that. And it was interesting because when I started, I went back to the night school when I was working, and I you know, became very friendly with people of color, and I couldn't tell people apart because I was never around them. So until I got to know Tony from John, and we became friends and stuff like that. But I had no, you know, it's like the only way to overcome fear is exposure. And when I was exposed and I found out that everybody was just a bunch of knuckleheads down south, and, you know, I forgive them and I love them, but, you know, I didn't know. No, I was a different, it was a culture shock. And Connecticut, I mean, I love Hartford, Connecticut. I mean, I hear people talk about Hartford. I mean, I see the poverty in the city of Hartford. But there's some wonderful people live in this city, in the South End and North End and the West End of Hartford. And we don't hear the good things. You know, there's a few knuckleheads, but everybody I know in this city work hard. And they work hard and they try to take care of their families. But nobody focus on that. They focus on the little knuckleheads that go out and do things. And we got to give this city some hope. We got to give the kids some hope. Because they have lost it. And, you know, the thing is that they don't see anybody look like them that's successful. One of the things, they need role models. And their role models, unfortunately, is people who singing or dancing or bouncing a ball or selling drugs. And they need to see people, you know, like you guys and like myself and like and Yvonne Davis and stuff that's being successful. Because a guy told me the other day, he said, you know, Curtis, every Saturday morning, I get the kids in the car. He live in Windsor, and he drive them down Woodland Street so he could see my name on the building. He said they never seen an African American name on a building.
Wow.
And he said, and I show him that, look, here's a man who came up with nothing. And now his name is on the largest hospital in the East.
Let's hold that thought. This is terrific.
10 minutes before the hour of 8, Curtis Robinson will be right back with us.
News, weather, traffic, politics with Brad and Dan. This is the Brad and Dan Show on the Talk of Connecticut.
7:54, 6 minutes before the hour of 8 o'clock, Curtis Robinson, Curtis and Sheila Robinson Foundation, and our special guest. You know, I got to tell you, I was telling the story to Dan about Curtis. And he said, we got to get him on the program. We got to get him in here. And that's the reason he's here this morning.
He's such an inspiration. Now, Curtis, before we went to break, we're talking about some of the knuckleheads out there. Mm-hmm. How do you convince the teens, for example, in Hartford right now? Not all the teens, but obviously there's an element out there involved in stealing cars, mm-hmm. serving like runners for these drug dealers, mm-hmm. because it's easy money, or they think it's easy money. They see people with a wad of money in their hands. Mm-hmm. How do you convince them to stay on the straight and narrow and pursue worthwhile endeavors as you did?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's difficult because you got babies having babies. You know, these kids come up, they don't have any religious value. They took, the prayers out of school. We have to start early, you know. I think that, you know, if you provide housing without a job, you just provide more welfare. I think what we have to do is create jobs and get these kids to working. I mean, you know, I always say that years ago when people came over from Europe, a lot of them didn't speak English, so they worked in the factories and the foundries. And I said, look, me and my wife bought an American flag about a month ago. It was made in Taiwan. I said, why don't we go to Taiwan and say, you know what, continue to make the flags, but send it over here unassembled. You know, and if you can count to 10, you got a job. We can take these factories that they turned into condos, open them back up, right? If a person can count to 10, we can put them on piecework. We don't have to open up a sweatshop, but after they make, say, 100 pieces, you give them $15 an hour in daycare. Right? And if you can't count to 10, we'll put it in blue, green, and red. And if you're blind, we'll put it in Braille. Right? Now, there is no reason for you not to be able to work. Because I talked to Dr. Ben Carson, who's a dear friend, last week. And I said, Ben, HUD can finance a $200,000 home at 3%, right, at $800 a month for 30 years. So now, if you got a guy working at McDonald's making $400 a week and his wife working at Burger King and making $400 a week, they should be able to afford a home, you know? So, you know, I'm saying that, you know, and the thing is that you drop the credit score. You got to give people jobs. People that's working, it's not people making $30,000 a year, it's not breaking in people's homes. That's why you can leave stuff open in the suburbs, but you can't in the cities because people don't have jobs. Jobs is number one. Everything falls around jobs. We just did a project with our construction company, and we tore down one of the projects in the city of Hartford, and they built scattered housing. You go by those scattered housing. You think you were in Beverly Hills. Now, those are the same people that used to, you know, not take care of that place, but now they own these particular homes, and that's home ownership. Now they're getting involved with the parks and the art and the schools. You got to give them jobs, you know? Take some of these empty properties that's in the city, right, and open up greenhouses. You know, I'm on the board of St. Francis Hospital, and we see so many young kids coming in with obesity. We had a kid the other day, 12 years old, 275 pounds, with hypertension and blood diabetes. because they don't have any vegetables or fruit. You know, we had a town hall meeting. A woman said she had to drive for an hour to get a kid an apple. So I said, why can't we turn some of these vacant lots? And you know, I know you have some gardens now, but I'm talking about all year round. Have the Yukon Horticulture School to teach these kids how to grow lettuce, tomatoes, and give it to the elderly and give it to the young kids so they can start learning how to eat and exercise. And you get, that's how you got to do it. You got to start from the bottom. You got to give a person a job, because worse than, when you got a job, you have some options. You can stay in the city, or you can don't stay in the city. But when you don't have a job, then you resort to things that, you know, and let me say this, you know, and I'm going to be very quickly about it. Every person who come in this country, every nationality come in this country, have seen success from whence they came. Whether they came from Italy, whether they came from Germany, it doesn't make any difference. India doesn't make, they seen success from whence they came. So when they got off the boat, they know that they could be successful. African Americans have never seen success, because they had 400 years of slavery. They never seen success. Their success is people who's bouncing the ball, selling drugs, or singing and dancing. Those are those role models. So you have to take in consideration that, you know, the Supreme Court justice say you can't be what you can't see.
How do we use you as a role model?
Well, I
want to get into that in the next half hour.
Okay.
Boy,
okay.
This is exactly, Dan, great question. Yeah. Great question, and it can happen. This can happen. All right?
We've just scratched the surface with Curtis. Another half hour to go.
Okay, Daniel, very special guest and dear friend since 1958 with me when he came to town, Curtis Robinson from the Curtis and Sheila Robinson Foundation, and he does so much with St. Francis Hospital. And has really got into more than just this community.
Curtis, you have a book coming out. Talk
yes.
a bit about that.
Well, you know, Dr. Ben Carson is a dear friend. Him and his wife, Candy, encouraged me to write this book about 8-9 years ago. And I said, nobody wanted to read about me. He said, Ben. He said, Curtis. He said, look, I've written 5 books, and I thought the same thing. So his wife gave me this recorder to tape. She said, just tape, you know, when you get a chance, you know, just speak in it anytime you think of something. So, you know, for about 2 years, I didn't do anything, and then she kept bugging me, so I decided to just sit down, and because I was getting, I said, I better write this thing before I forget most of the things that I've done, and so I took a stab at it, and I finished it about, Yvonne, what, about 3 weeks ago? I finished it, and since then, it's been, I mean, we got endorsement from Stedman Graham, which is Oprah's boyfriend. I got endorsement from Dr. Ben Carson, and I think Senator Blumenthal, Marna Bersham, and President of Yale.
What's the name of the book?
From the Back of the Bus.
You're kidding.
From the Back of the Bus.
What a title.
It's,
from the Back of the Bus.
From the Back of the Bus, yeah. And I wrote it because I think I want young kids to see that here's a boy from Alabama who came up with nothing and, you know, and just kept himself clean, kept his eyes on the prize, and didn't, you know, wasn't distorted by any, you know, fast making money and all this other stuff. And I made it. And if Curtis Roberts can make it, anyone can make it. And I just want to encourage all the young people out there who have given up hope that, you know, you look at me. Just think of my life. Just think of me. I used to walk the street of Hartford with no money. You know, that's why I feed the hungry, because I know how it feels to be hungry. You know, and I made it, and you can make it too. You just got to keep clean, keep your eyes on the prize. Don't be thinking about things that happened yesterday and thinking that someone's going to give you something for nothing. You know, every action has a reaction. You do good, good will come back. And the thing is that you just got to just stay strong and stop, you know, watching all these movies and all this glitter and stuff. It's not going to happen. You know, it's 1,400 athletes out of 350 million people, and the chance of you becoming an NBA or a star is like hitting the lottery. You know, so stay in school, listen to your teacher, don't get in trouble, and, you know, I don't care how negative you are, hang out with positive people. Because if you're positive and you hang out with negative people, you're going to become negative. So just hang out. I always hung out with somebody who wanted something. You know, I would never hang out with anybody who didn't want anything. You know, so I don't want to be a product of a statistic. you know? I mean, you know, when you look in that city of Hartford, got 30% poverty. I mean, come on. Come on, guys. You know, God gave us two arms, two legs, one heart. He made us all the same. You know, we have the same opportunity. We have to use them. And stop thinking that people owe you something. No one owes you anything. You got to get out and bust your behind and work hard, stay clean, get a good education, and you'll have something. You know? I mean, but everybody is, you know, if you give a person a fish, you eat today. You teach them how to fish, they'll eat forever. We got to start teaching these kids how to fish. And, you know, and don't be a product of, you know, I mean, I talked to Dr. Ben Carson. His mom married, his brother's name is Curtis, too. His mom married this man and found out that he was married to another woman on the other side of the bridge. And, you know, and he had him and his brother. His mother had no education, but she made him and his brother go to the library every day. And at the end of the week, she would highlight the different things that they had written, because she made him write a report every week. And he didn't realize until he was 17 that his mother couldn't read.
Wow.
But at that time, he had gathered so much information. He was one of the smartest kids in the school. And look, he became a neurosurgeon. His brother is a rocket scientist from a mother who had no education. Come on, guys. We can do better than this. And the city of Hartford, is a beautiful city of Hartford, beautiful people, you know. But we just got to start concentrating on our children because, you know, success without a successor means nothing. We got to start concentrating on our children. And I want to thank Brad and, you know, and Dan because, you know, this needed to be said so long ago. And, you know, a lot of people just, you know, they make it and they forget from whence they come. I never forgot from whence I came. I never forgot how it is to be poor. And God have given me a loaf of bread. And I'm going to share it. I'm going to share it. Because at the end of the day, none of this stuff mean anything. When they put you in that hole, all this is gone. And I tell people I've never seen a Brinks truck fall in a hearse. You know?
I want to talk about the foundation. We do have a traffic update.
Absolutely, right? Absolutely. 17 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock, Curtis Robinson, a very special guy, good friend, our special guest. Here we are today, Dan, yours truly, talking with a dear friend, Curtis Robinson, that I met many years ago, and I want to tell you something. He didn't have a dime. And what he has developed, and he's into the hospital, St. Francis Hospital. He's working, and he's done so much for so many people, but he is an inspiration to young people, okay? He knows what it's all about, and that's our problem today, Dan.
Curtis, do you go around and speak at various schools?
Yeah, I've spoke over at different schools, Weaver, and different grade schools. You know, and I always encourage the kids to, you know, not concentrate on the athletic, but and more on the educational part. And, you know, I was speaking to a first grade about, I don't know, 8 years ago, and I went back in the eighth grade, and I spoke to the same school. And this kid came up to me and said, you know, I remember when I was in the first grade, he said, I've never seen anyone like you. And he said, I remember what you said. And he said, from that day on, he said, it changed my life. And I didn't even know he was listening, but it really made me feel good.
Yeah, I'm sure. Talk a bit about the Curtis and Sheila Foundation.
Well, Curtis and Sheila Foundation, it was interesting. My accountant really forced me into this because we were just trying to take care of people who was homeless and people who didn't have anything. I remember we had one guy sleeping in his car with his baby, and he had a 2-year-old and a 3-month. So he would start his car every hour, and he was taking the gas station to get, you know, wash up and stuff. And someone came and told us about it. And that's just one incident. And, you know, we found out we got him a place and took care of him and got him a job. But things like this you can't write off. We don't do things to write it off. And they said, well, why don't you guys start a foundation? And I said, really? Why was that? They said, well, a lot of these stuff, you're giving away 60% of your income. He said, you can't write it off. My accountant said, well, why don't you start the foundation? That would be helpful. And I said, okay. So we started the foundation, and what we do, the foundation is pretty much for people who don't have anything. You know, people who's desperate, people who've been burned out. I mean, we got the wonderful Red Cross. We got people who, like last week, we gave away some 100 cars, gas for people just to get back to work. So sometimes people just need a little start. They just need a little start. And that's what my wife and I, we have a house down in Bridgeport called Reentry Ministry, where we take these women off the street who's pretty much, you know, drug dependent, and we put them through an 18-month program. And 95% of these people never went back on drugs.
Wow.
And now we just open up a daycare down there for them. And in Southington, we try to feed all the children in the morning, make sure that they go to school with a full stomach. And we take care of the elderly. On the 28th, they run out of money, and we try to make sure that they have food. So that's some of the things my wife and I, because at the end of the day, God is not going to ask us how much money, how many homes. He's going to say, what did you do with the gift that I gave you? Mm-hmm. And my wife and I, we want to say to God, we tried to give back. We tried to, you know, we tried to do your will.
Now, you mentioned, and it happened last Saturday, where you had these $20 fill-ups for 100 cars. And
right.
You had a lot of help.
And you were right here.
Yes.
Hartford Police helped you out.
Yes, Hartford Police was fantastic. They were so wonderful. The chief sent us, it must have had about 8 or 9, 10 officers there. We had the Liberty Church on Albany Avenue. Reverend Bowden came out. He was one of the sponsors. We had University of Hartford. My granddaughter's a senior at University of Hartford. And we had a lot of the community people just came. It was just so wonderful. We gave out donuts, and we gave water, and you know, it was interesting. You know, people were sitting in the car, and they said, this is going to help us so much. You know, I can get to work now because, you know, it's hard being working poor.
How many cars?
Oh, my God. Well, it was 100. It was 100, but we had to cut it off at 100. But it was. And we're going to try to do that at least a couple of times a year, two or three times a year, because we didn't realize that was that much.
$20 worth of gasoline.
Right. Wow. Right.
Yeah. So, and you're going to do it in Southington in September?
Yes, we're going to do that in Southington in September. We're working on that now with Reverend Triano. She's a city council person out in Southern. So we're working with Vicky on that.
If we could somehow, how do we reach these young kids though, Curtis? I want to go back to that. How do we reach them so that they understand that they can become a success, but it's going to require work and it's going to require some inner passion?
Mm-hmm. I think they need to see more role models. They need to see people that looks like them, that have made it, and then, you know, was not athletes or singers or dance. They have to see business people. They have to see people in the community that, you know, that looks like them, that's successful, and they don't see that. See, you know, most people see that every day, and you don't even pay it any attention because it's subliminal. They never see anybody look like them that's successful.
But, you know, we've had African-American police chiefs, African-American firefighters, mm-hmm. African-American mayors.
Mm-hmm. We had African-American president.
President.
Right. Hasn't changed. The thing is that that's just like the guys who sing and dance. That's one out of 10 million. You know, they don't see it every day. They don't drive down. They don't get up in the morning and drive or walk down and see their name and see people who own stuff and see people who not only in business, but, you know, people that they feel that's successful, that looks like them. So they don't feel, I don't know if I could make it because I don't see anybody that look like me that really made it. And then, unfortunately, sometimes when people make it, they move out of the community and they never come back to the community. So they don't see them, you know.
That's a good
point. Everybody in Hartford who makes options, I already said, when they move out. So they don't, you know, they don't, unfortunately, they don't come back. So you got to come back. They got to come back to the community. You know, and this city is probably 120,000 people in a day. I mean, 200,000 in a day, and at night it's 100 and something. So they all leave. And on Friday, everybody leaves the city with a paycheck. It's like going taking money out of a bank and never making a deposit. You got to bring the money back. You got to keep the money. That's why I'm so glad to see the yard and people coming back to the city. Right. But we need people to live in the city. People come back and live in the city. so they can see when you make it, don't move out the city, come back. And if you move out, come back and do your shopping. You come back and get your hair cut, but you don't, that's it. You're gone. Come back and buy your groceries. Come back and support the local businesses on Albany Avenue and Park Street. You know, it's good people. You know, don't be afraid. You know, if I was an African-American, I would be afraid of African-American because all I see is negative. All I see, these people on TV that's shooting and killing, I don't know any of those people. Most people don't in the community don't know any of those people. All the people we know is working two jobs and trying to take care of their family. But they don't show those type of people. I always say, if you help an old lady cross the street, nobody paid any attention. But you go and mug her, then the media and everybody. So let's start showing the good side of Hartford. Because there's a lot of good people in this city, but we don't see that. And those are the things that we have to start showing. And I think the kids need to see that.
And those are the things you've been doing.
Yes. But we need more role models. We need more people I just think that, you know, my brothers and sisters out there, if you listen to me, you need to come back. You need to come back. You know, once you make it, you need to come back. And we're not doing that.
How do we bring industry back to the city?
Well, you bring them back, as I said, that, you know, if we open up like they did back in the 50s when Brad and I was friends, we had Underwoods, we had Royal, right. you had all, most of these people's piecework, right? So if we take the phone system or a computer system and say, you know what, just one, I would say anything come in this city should be a symbol, or anything coming to state should be a symbol in this state. You mark it, one to go into two, to two into three. You don't have to be a brain surgeon to put one into ten, right? That's what they did years ago. People couldn't speak English. So you create jobs, and once you create the jobs, you're going to create beautiful communities, because people that's working is not out robbing people.
Sorry.
You know? So we got to give people some jobs. And once you get a person a job, it's going to solve 90% of the problem.
How do we improve the housing? Because we hear, and for lack of a better description, some of these slumlords, although there's an element out there when I say that, who claim, well, they're not slumlords. The people who live in these apartments don't take care of these apartments. How do we overcome all of this?
Well, because they don't have any ownership. You take those same people and you gave them a part. If they own that apartment, like I told you, these projects, it was torn down and they built these scattered houses and moved those same people back. Same people you stole garbage out, the one that's now own their homes. And you go by their house and drop a pack of gum in front of their house, they would, you know, you'd be in big trouble. And those are beautiful homes over in Stowe Village and Charter Oak Terrace and different places. Those same people used to live in the project. Right? But you got to give people a job. Once a person get a job, it solves all the other... You give a person a house and not a job, you're not helping them. Oh, we need housing. No, you need jobs. You give a person a house, give a person a job and he can get a house. Stop giving people things. You know, it's just like your child. You give them something, they don't appreciate it. Make them work for it. You know? I mean, I remember when Ross Perot said that, you know, he said he was worth $300 million. He still didn't think that he was successful until his kid took over his business. He said success without a successor means nothing. The thing is that you buy a kid something, they'll play with the box. They don't have value. You have to teach them. You have to teach them. You know, and we're so materialistic. We have to get out of that. And the worst thing we can do, ladies and gentlemen, is say we don't want to have our children to have it harder than we had it. No, they should have it much harder than you had it. Because you see what you're raising. You got to make sure that they understand the value of a dollar and the value of anything that they own. And stop giving it to them because you're not helping them.
Coming up to 8:30 in the morning.
Curtis, thanks so much for coming in studio.
You,
it's been an honor. We'll have you back. We can't wait for the book to come out.
Oh, yeah.
We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about
it. You're not going anywhere.
You're
going to be right here in this city.
As we get closer to what's happening in Southington, we'll get you back to talk about
that.
Thank
you, Dad. Thank you, Brad.